I want to begin my reflections this morning with a reading from Reverend Leslie Takahashi called Marginal Wisdom. They teach us to read in black and white. Truth is this, the rest is false. You are whole or broken. Who you love is acceptable or not. Life tells us its truth in many hues. We are taught to think in either or, to believe the teachings of Jesus or Buddha, to believe in human potential or a power beyond a single will. I am broken or I am powerful. We are taught to see in absolutes. Good versus evil, male versus female, old versus young, gay versus straight. Let us see the fractions, the spectrum, the margins. Let us open our hearts to the complexity of our worlds. Let us make our lives sanctuaries to nurture our many identities. Now, the day is coming when all will know that the rainbow world is more gorgeous than monochrome, that a river of identities can ebb and flow over the static, stubborn rocks in its course, that the margins hold the center. Now, in the reading, we find we are taught to think in either or, to believe the teachings of Jesus or Buddha. And yet, we find almost identical approaches to good and evil in both traditions. In the Dhammapada, the collection of sayings attributed to the Buddha, we find, to avoid all evil, to cultivate good, and to cleanse one's mind, this is the teaching of the Buddhas. And in the Bible, we find in Isaiah chapter 1, cease to do evil, learn to do good, seek justice, rebuke the oppressor. So in both cases, we find the implication that good and evil relate to individual behavior. And this isn't some case of a case of some absolute dichotomy or separation between good and evil. The song we heard by Pete Seeger, Turn, 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 which is based on Ecclesiastes, tells us that duality and polarities are basic elements of life and the choices we make. One of the approaches to good and evil that really resonates most strongly for me is found in the Tao Te Ching. Now, I often refer to the Stephen Mitchell translation of the Tao Te Ching, attributed to the possibly mythical Lao Tzu. The Tao can best be compared to the mystery or void at the heart of creation, or even to the word God. In one of the verses, the Tao doesn't take sides. It gives birth to both good and evil. The Master doesn't take sides. She welcomes both saints and sinners. The Tao is like a bellows. It is empty, yet infinitely capable. The more you use it, the more it produces. The more you talk of it, the less you understand. Hold on to the center. Probably a very familiar symbol for many people is the one related to Taoism, where we see the black and white gathered together. The dualities are all part of that. As UU Minister Reverend James Ishmael Ford put it, as we make our choices within this world, with each of our actions that follows those choices, we open the gates of good and evil. So, of course, there is evil. Knowing and accepting this is very important. But there is also something beyond. When we discover that profound unity which is true, and the realm of discrimination which is true, are not actually two. In that fraction of a second, we open something incredible, healing, and compelling. Now, there's a story that probably many of us will have heard in different variations, and this story looks at this realm of discrimination. The story of two wolves. An old Cherokee is teaching his grandson about life. "A fight is going on inside me," he says to the boy. "It is a terrible fight, and it is between two wolves. One is evil. He is anger, envy, sorrow, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, guilt, resentment, inferiority, lies, false pride, superiority, and ego." He continues, "And the other is good. He is joy, peace, love, hope, serenity, humility, kindness, benevolence, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith." Now the same fight is going on inside you and inside every other person too. The grandson thought about it for a minute and then asked his grandfather, "Which wolf will win?" The old Cherokee simply replied, "The one you feed." Now, I have always found a Buddhist approach to this question of good and evil to be a useful one. And I want to share some words from the Dalai Lama as he expresses thoughts that reflect my own thinking, but in a way that's much cleaner or clearer than any words I might find. And they come from The Art of Happiness in a Troubled World. Evil in Buddhism. This concept of evil, even the very word evil, can be problematic. It seems in the West there is a tendency to see things in absolute terms, to see things as black or white, all or nothing. On top of that, under the influence of mental states such as anger, this tendency becomes even stronger. A kind of distortion of one's thinking, one's perception, takes place. You immediately seek a target, looking for an individual or a group to blame, something concrete that you can direct all your anger and outrage at. And in that state, you see things in terms of all good or all bad, see people as good or evil. So from that perspective, you might view a person as purely evil. But from a Buddhist perspective, we have no concept of absolute evil, in the sense of evil as something which exists independently, something that is not caused by other factors, that cannot be affected by other factors, and cannot be changed or modified by other conditions. Absolute evil has a sense of permanence. So we do not accept the idea of evil people in the sense that a particular person's intrinsic nature is 100% evil, and that they remain that way because it is their fundamental, unchanging nature. We do have the concept of a person acting in an evil way, doing evil things, under the influence of negative emotions and bad motivation and so on, but we see this evil behavior arising as a result of certain causes and conditions. We feel such events can be explainable without invoking a metaphysical force like evil. Now, if a person commits a very destructive act, you can say that act is evil, and you should always oppose that act as an evil act. You must take a very strong stand. And let's say that the person's motivation for the act was hatred. Then you can say that both the motivation and the action that it leads to are evil because of their destructive nature. But we still cannot view that individual as an evil person, intrinsically and permanently evil, because there is always the potential or possibility that a new set of conditions will come into play, and that very same person may no longer engage in evil behavior. Saying that nobody is intrinsically evil, that evil is a relative state dependent on other factors, does not give someone an excuse to commit those evil acts. Just because you allow for the possibility of one's motivations and behaviors to change in the future, this does not mean that you somehow excuse or condone that act, and that you do not hold them responsible as if they had nothing to do with it. Now, Leonard Cohen's song, Bird on a Wire, has always spoken to me very directly, and I think it addresses this mix of good and evil in all of us. And for a long time, I sort of thought of myself acting in the world like someone from the song, like a bird on a wire, like a drunk in a midnight choir. I was trying in my way to be free. Life was and is always the choice of which wolf to feed. There is always this question of choice of behaviors or thought or actions, and will they lead to positive or good results or negative evil results? Right at this time in the world, we're faced with a clear choice. Are we racist or anti-racist? UU theologian Reverend Dr. Rebecca Parker writes, "I think our humanism is our best resource when it helps us understand that our freedom of choice means that all of us are capable of evil acts as well as wonderful acts. We need religion not to protect us from this world, but to enable us to engage in a way that repairs and restores life." Now, I personally think that our Unitarian Universalist principles offer an excellent framework for making choices, bookended by the first principle of the inherent worth and dignity of every person, and the seventh principle, the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. And so, for me, that story of the two wolves has the whole of this presentation wrapped up in its few lines. I know that one of the problems many of us face is in defining terms. Certainly, good and evil can be looked at in a number of different ways. And I think the story of the two wolves offers, at least for me, a good working definition of way of looking at it. And I'm sure for many others of you, this would be a fodder for a great deal of discussion. So, and if any of you are looking at for more ways of exploring these questions, the Touchstones material that we have offers a great deal. And if anybody wants to email me, I can certainly send you all the packets on the Touchstones material on good and evil. Here's a final quote. People are almost equally capable of both good and evil. But most of the time, say 3 times out of 5, people choose the good. The seesaw tilts just a few degrees toward the good in this tentative world. But those few degrees are the difference between peace and Armageddon. The job of the church is to put the few stubborn ounces of our weight on the side of goodness and press down for all we're worth. That's from UU Minister Reverend Patrick O'Neill. So there is a challenge for all of us, both personally and as part of this community. Which wolf will we feed? May we continue to take up this challenge. May it be so, and may we make it so. Blessed be.